Hi everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. Joining me once again is the preternaturally resplendent video.
Preternaturally resplendent.
That's right.
I'll take that. I don't know what that means, but thank you.
I'm trying out new words. I was going to try out different types of names, but I just hit Video Wizard and it stuck. You may have noticed since at least 10 episodes now.
It makes me feel good. So thank you.
That's not going anywhere. So yes, what have you been up to, George?
Not too much. Haven't watched many films, but I've just watched The Boys season 2. Well, I would love to say that I've just watched all of The Boys season 2, but unfortunately, I forgot, and so did many others, that they have decided to only release 3 episodes this Friday, just gone, and then there'll be, I think, another 2 every Friday going forward. Totally understand why they've done this, because it means more people will be talking about the show, more YouTubers will be doing deep dives, theory discussions, a lot more people will be talking about it. However, on Sunday night, when I was hungover and I wanted to watch the 4th episode and I couldn't, I wasn't very happy. No. I kept spamming my PlayStation controller, hoping the next episode would magically appear, and it wouldn't. But I totally get why they've done it. It makes a lot of sense. It's the same with The Mandalorian, you know, Baby Yoda, because they release those episodes every week, Baby Yoda became even more of a massive cultural phenomenon than it might have if it had all been released in one go.
Yeah, true. I mean, there's something to be said for spreading things out. I mean, when Stranger Things, like, season 3 dropped, you know, everyone was talking about it for, like, a weekend, or maybe a week.
Yeah,
and that's about it. Done. You know, and everyone loved it. It was really, really good. But, you know, then it was just done. Whereas, they spread out Mandalorian and that carried on for weeks or months.
Well, they really spread that out, because then we got it in the UK several months later, so it was spread out even more.
Yeah, I think that might have been a little bit too far to the other end of the scale, but hey-ho. But yes, now I'm looking forward to season 2, actually. I really, really enjoyed season 1. I love just how raw the whole thing is. I was watching the Honest trailer for season 1. And I just love, basically, they just broke it down so brilliantly in saying that the suspension of disbelief isn't that there are superheroes. The suspension of disbelief is that they wouldn't immediately burn us all to the ground.
Yeah.
I've never been so terrified of a superhero ever. And yeah, I just loved the whole thing. So yeah, looking forward to catching season 2 when I get 5 minutes to sit down. But shall we jump into our news segment of the week?
Yeah.
Excellent. So we're going to talk a little bit about the cinema box office and what success looks like in the age of coronavirus. So as you know, the film that we love to talk about has finally been released.
Woo!
We
love Trolls World Tour.
So as of September the 7th, Tenet has passed the $150 million mark worldwide. It opened Labor Day weekend in the United States, which is the week after it opened in most other territories around the world, because a lot of the cinemas in the States are still closed because of high COVID infection rates in large parts of the US. But it opened to just over $20 million over the Labor Day weekend in 2,810 theatres. So the UK got its first look at the film, as I said, the previous weekend with a $7.1 million opening. And in the UK, it's pulled in just over $13 million to date. So if we examine the top 5 highest grossing films over the Labor Day weekend in the US, only 3 of them grossed over $1 million, which is just insane when you think about the kind of money that you're used to seeing. Something like Tenet, you know, you'd expect it to open 60, 70 million, probably higher. Now you kind of have to look at its opening of 20 million and just kind of examine whether or not you can call it a success or not.
No, given the circumstances, it's kind of a success.
Yeah, especially when you compare it to the other 2 films that made over $1 million that weekend. So one of them being The New Mutants, which made $3.6 million over the same weekend, and Russell Crowe's Unhinged pulled in $2.2 million. So circling back to New Mutants, when that opened, to give it a bit more of a fair comparison to Tenet, it opened to just over $7 million, and Unhinged opened to about $601,000, and that has been ticking slowly upward with each passing week. So the worldwide totals of New Mutants and Unhinged stand at $20.8 million and $11.8 million, respectively. So all three of these films were anticipated in some way. Unhinged was supposed to be the first wide release of a new movie post-lockdown. New Mutants had been anticipated for however many years, to the point that people were questioning its actual existence. And Tenet was supposed to be the film which brought everybody back to the cinema and saved the theatrical experience, so to speak. So just kind of looking at the numbers that they've done, to what extent do you think we can say that that has actually been the case for Tenet? Has the theatrical experience been saved? And to what degree should cinemas and studios start revising down the kind of grosses they should expect for highly anticipated big ticket films? George, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do with this information. Obviously, like a lot of people now are going to be pretty scared about putting their films out because it hasn't quite made what we expected. But I would still say it's technically a success under the circumstances with Tenet, like I mentioned earlier. I think technically that's good under the circumstances. I went and saw the film. I enjoyed it. The cinema experience can still continue under the circumstances, at least in the UK. I know in America with their much higher cases, it's a lot less likely. I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah, maybe everything has to become much more low budget. Maybe things will become a lot more just based on, put out on streaming sites and services like that. Maybe that's just the way forward and that's where it's going to have to go. I just watched Staged, which is David Tennant and Michael Sheen, and that's completely filmed in lockdown on Zoom. The whole thing is done that way. And it's amazing. It's on Netflix. It's really well done. And I've really enjoyed that. And there's a few TV shows who have done lockdown specials which have been enjoyable. But I don't want everything to be like that, but maybe for the foreseeable future, a lot of shows and films will have to go that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with lockdown sort of easing to different extents in different parts of the world, and Hollywood being a very international filmmaking community, there are big productions that are starting to open up again. Mission Impossible, I believe, is rolling again. Yeah. So in terms of the kinds of films we're used to seeing, depending on who does what and where, then, you know, it's quite possible we will continue to see the traditional types of films that we're used to. One of the types of things that studios use when examining box office results is this thing called a multiplier. So what they do is they look at what a film made in its opening weekend, and then they look at what it made across its entire run, and the multiplier essentially is how many times its opening weekend it did across its entire run. And depending on the movie, if it does well, then its multiplier is usually sort of like 3 or 4 times its opening weekend. Sometimes the multiplier is quite low, even if the film actually does really, really well, because it's quite front-loaded. So something like Avengers Endgame, for example, was incredibly front-loaded in terms of its box office because everyone went straight away. And so its multiplier was like 2 or something. But given the films Christopher Nolan's made and their box office performance, if you remove the Batman films from there, because that's obviously those are obviously franchise movies and they come with their own expectations. But if you look at his top three, his highest grossing film worldwide is Inception, which was $797.2 million. And then there was Interstellar with $654 million and then Dunkirk with $520 million. With Tenet now being at $150 million, maybe, I mean, because there's so few films out there, then you can expect it to run for a little while. And, you know, if we assume a positive reception to the film and also assume that there aren't going to be any other delays, any other lockdowns, which then take away available cinemas for the film to play in, stuff like that, then maybe looking at a multiplier of 3 to 4 for something like Tenet, maybe. I'm spitballing here, but
yeah.
Assuming it does that, then you can make an assumption that it'll top out domestically at around $60 million, and it'll top out worldwide at around, say, $450 million, if it has a good long run without interruptions and people continue to see it on a regular basis with good word of mouth, so on and so forth. So with a film as expensive as that, it's probably not going to make its money back theatrically. And given that that is one of the more highly anticipated movies, then I think maybe we're looking at the end of sort of those B-level movies being given budgets of 100 million plus. It's just not going to happen because they're not going to make that money back. So, yeah, are we looking at maybe returning to the type of film that you can make for, say, $50 million? In which case, you might see a lessening of the big spectacle movie and a return to the sort of Pulp Fictions and the Mulholland Drives of the sort of mid to late 90s, perhaps. Again, spitballing, but it'd be interesting to see what studios plan to do, given what they're likely to make at the box office until there's a vaccine. So perhaps we'll start to see a resurgence of your indie filmmakers who can work within those types of budgets, and hopefully we'll see a return to a bit of diversity in content when it comes to going to the cinema. Who knows? But shall we move on to our short films?
Let's do it.
So this week we have two very different types of science fiction, both very thought-provoking, and both, it's fair to say, push the envelope in very different ways. One of them, you could technically call it a bit of a cheat.
It's a short film, it's part of a very high-budget anthology series that most listeners probably would have heard of, which is Love, Death and Robots on Netflix. So we're kind of cheating, but I just love this episode so much that I had to include it.
But it's still a short film. If it's an anthology of short stories, then that taken in isolation is a short film. So Judge says we're all good.
He banged the gavel. He banged the gavel. You all heard it.
You all heard it, exactly. Anyway, shall we start with the first film, which is a science fiction romantic comedy, Control Z, written and directed by James Kennedy, and is an adventure through time that begins in a greasy Manchester cafe when Ed, a hopeless in love inventor, creates a device that allows him to undo time. So with unlimited chances, he has hopes of impressing the girl of his dreams, but that's not as easy as it sounds. And with his best friend Carrie by his side, he must fight to undo the past and get the girl. This film, I would say, is quite possibly the best use of comedy in science fiction, or vice versa, that I've seen in a very, very long time. It's hilarious, and it's also incredibly clever. It very much hinges on the central two characters, so two best friends, Ed and Carrie, and it transpires that Ed has invented a machine where, effectively, if you hit the button on the side, it creates a save point in time, where if you get killed after that, you return to that point in time and you can carry on going forward. So Ed basically has built this machine and has been using it to give himself endless amounts of chances at trying to impress a beautiful woman that has come into the cafe where he's met up with his best friend Carrie. The two of them, Ed and Carrie, are just a comedy duo. They just exemplify British comedy. They are hilarious and they anchor the entire thing. You buy that they're really good friends. You buy that one is constantly telling the other to stop being an idiot and take control of your life. And they basically just have this really sort of lovable, captivating kind of relationship between the two of them that really just pulls you into the world that they're in and really makes you invest in them as characters as well. And with the completely outlandish nature of the plot, it just plays into their style of comedy so brilliantly. You're just 100% there for it within minutes of the film starting. George, what were some of your thoughts on it?
I loved it. I agree. It's hilarious. It's quintessential kind of Britcom as well. Most punchlines end in mate. It's that kind of witty, kind of charmful banter that you can get between two friends. And like you say, the charisma of the two of them, it's very believable that they are friends and they have chemistry, which just adds to the whole short itself. But it's amazing. I love it. The short doesn't take itself too seriously as well. There is a device that, as you described, can make you go back in time, but they don't really need to do much around explaining that. In fact, even when they come to explaining it, that is used as a punchline as well. And I like that. We don't need to waste time in sci-fi comedy explaining every single minute detail about the sci-fi. Get us to the funny. That's what you need to do. And this short gets you to the funny straight away. You're having a good time regardless, and you want to see where it goes, which, of course, is powerful. But yeah, I really like seeing the device itself and all the sound effects and the music, so the score sort of rising as you see it, this sort of tech device making it seem more mysterious. And then, before you know it, you've been hit in the face with another punchline, so you don't even have time to think about it anymore. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it kind of gets all of its various disparate elements, the sort of sci-fi element, the mystery elements, the romance elements, the comedy elements, but it doesn't overuse any one. And if anything, it channels them all towards the comedy. So the romance aspects of it are very much played for laughs. So, you know, when the girl comes in, you get the rising, swelling music. And, you know, she's just almost laughably perfect.
Yeah,
especially considering that Ed, played by Edward Easton, is just such a mess. Not necessarily a loser, but he's just a mess.
Yeah, he's just a bit all over the place. You know, one of those kinds of people, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Kath Hughes, who plays Carrie, she is basically his moral compass. Just the one that just isn't afraid to just tell it to him as it is. Although you get the impression that she's a bit of a mess as well. But she's a bit more of a controlled mess. And just that dynamic between the two of them works so well. And then when you kind of weave that into the almost Groundhog Day, Edge of Tomorrow sort of aspects of it, and just how either insane it is or how annoyed you would be if you found out that someone had been resetting your life over and over and over and over again for something as superficial as, I want to try and get the number of the pretty girl in the booth over there. Just all of that. It just plays that comedy so brilliantly. Yeah.
There's so many levels to it, and I love that.
Yeah, and as you were saying before, it doesn't waste time on the science, but it doesn't really leave any plot holes either. So, you know.
No.
It seems like they have actually thought about how it would work and what the mechanics of it actually are.
They have, but they've done all that behind the scenes.
They've done all that behind the scenes.
They haven't bothered the audience with it, which is great.
Exactly. It's just like, we saw it, we figured it out, don't worry about it, it's fine.
Let's just go and come. Take your seat, enjoy your popcorn, let's go. Great, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, if I had any criticisms about it, it's probably that it is a bit on the long side. I think they...
Yes, a little bit.
I think they probably could have gotten there in less time. But at the same time... Because you enjoy watching all of the characters in it, not just the central two. You've got the background characters, you've got the waitress as well. She's hilarious.
Yeah, she's great. Every line she says is enjoyable.
Yeah, just the absolute deadpan reactions that she has to everything going on around. Yeah, she's just fantastic. But so basically, it's full of characters that you just enjoy watching. So if it does run long, it's not the biggest deal in the world. But because it runs long as well, it actually gives you enough time to fit in a pretty solid arc as well. Because there are questions to be asked about the morality of what he's doing, whether or not, even if he gets what he wants, if it's good for him, whether or not it's fair on anybody else, the nature of kind of manipulating destiny and all that kind of thing. And basically whether or not what he's created is, in fact, a cheat that he doesn't deserve.
Yeah.
So, you know, it actually touches on some pretty heady philosophical points without losing the fact that it is just a hilarious film. Just an absolutely brilliant film. And very, very well made as well. They spend the necessary time to not have any one aspect of it look shoddy. I mean, if you're writing this film, then the priority was clearly the comedy. But that doesn't mean that where they need special effects, they kind of half-ass it. They properly made it look spot on.
Yeah, the device looks good. It looks like a sci-fi device. It's believable. It's got great VFX. So the sound effects, like I mentioned earlier, going around it, it's all done very well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And there is a sort of part of the film, without getting too deep into its plot, where Ed demonstrates what happens when he dies. So he basically has to kill himself to demonstrate how the box works, which in itself is a gag because he's only demonstrating it to the audience, because if you're actually in the movie with him, you wouldn't see anything happening.
Yeah, you won't know.
The only thing you'd see is him pressing the button and that's it. And it's like, see, and it works. And that's how it works. It's like, what happened? Nothing, actually. You didn't do anything. Just the one particular time the first time he kills himself with the steak knife. And normally in film, someone gets stabbed and they die, and it happens in seconds. He stabs himself like, this is taking so long.
Yeah, I'm in a lot of pain.
Just little gags like that just absolutely floored me. It was fantastic. So, yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant, brilliant watch. And a very high recommendation from us.
Oh, yes, especially, and we almost forgot, there's Back to the Future references in it, which if you've listened to the podcast before, you'll know it's one of my favourite films. So I think Nigel chose this film specifically just for me. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Great, great jokes in it. And yeah, any film that references Back to the Future is excellent to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Control Z, written and directed by James Kennedy. You can find our full written review, as always, via the link in the episode notes. And you can also check out the film, which we've linked to the review as well. So moving on to our cheat pick, Love, Death and Robots, Beyond the Aquila Rift. So that is directed by Dominique Boyden and Leon Barrell.
I'd say it's
I completely mispronounced that. I know I did.
Okay.
So, plot-wise, this film is about the crew of a ship who awake after travelling light years off course and are shocked to discover where exactly they've ended up and just how far they've come. But that is only the beginning of the surprises and shocks that lie in wait for them. So, George, this one's your pick. So, how did you come across this one and what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I absolutely loved this. As we said, it's part of a wider anthology series, Love, Death and Robots, which I watched back in 2019. A lot of the episodes, there's only like one live action episode. It's basically all animation, showing off loads of different animation houses. Some of it's mocap. I believe this episode, Beyond the Aquila Rift, is all completely mocapped, but there's like some shots where it looks completely CG, and then there'll be a close-up. And the amount of detail they've got on someone's face that is CG has to have been based off of an actual mocapped actor. You can tell just by looking at it, which makes it a really beautiful, I would say almost trippy experience. Like, the visuals themselves are absolutely amazing combined with the score. But yeah, this is definitely a high budget short film. We're technically cheating with this one, as we've said, but I think it's absolutely brilliant. I think it stayed with me quite a bit. In a word, I would say this short film is disturbing. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's bloody brilliant. But yeah, I it still sometimes comes to me when I'm in my normal day-to-day life. I think about this exact episode because it's just so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I would echo most of that. Definitely in that it is quite disturbing. But also just the level of detail to the animation as well. I mean, even if you're talking about mocap, essentially, I mean, as the name suggests, you're just capturing the motion, but the surface level detail, the detail of the skin, beads of sweat, sort of
lighting on top of that,
the dust in space, stuff like that. The actual ships look physical. Now, normally you look at something that's CG, and even if it looks really good, it has a distinct air of CG about it, but the ships look like they're physical things, you know, and it's crazily impressive. And it will be very easy to kind of rest on your laurels in that respect and just kind of let that be the thing that's impressive about it. But actually, it's the concept behind the story, it's the way the story plays out, it's the way that they've thought about the sort of almost Twilight Zone in space-esque nature of it, and just the little techniques of storytelling that make the story so unsettling to watch, especially as things start to be revealed to the characters as well. It's so well done. It's so well done. And if I may say so, quite possibly one of the horniest films I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that's something we should probably mention when it comes to Love, Death and Robots.
Yes,
almost every episode has some gratuitous either sex scenes or nudity. We'll just mention that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so don't watch it in front of your kids. Just don't
watch
it
in front of your kids. But don't watch it in front of your kids.
No. But save it's designed to be very much for adults. Just in terms of not having to shy away from any given aspect. If you want to lean into how a certain scenario might turn someone's sexuality against them, you can't then shy away from the sexual facets of that story. You can't suggest it. You kind of have to show it. So Yeah, so it's not gratuitously violent or gratuitously adult. It all serves a narrative, thematic...
It does, yeah.
...atmospheric purpose. And in the case of Beyond the Aquila Rift, it has to go to certain places in order for the story to have the full impact that it has to have on the audience. And it's just, yeah, just fantastically well done, fantastically well put together. I don't think... Even if you had the budget to do it live action, I don't think you could have done it any better than that.
No. No. I wouldn't want to see that live action either.
No.
Like, I'm literally happy
actually, no.
with that.
No, I wouldn't want to see that live action. You're right.
It's actually based on a short story of the same name written by Alistair Reynolds, which I haven't read, but I've heard that it's pretty accurate to the short as well. But it's just amazing. I recommend watching it, and then I recommend reading all the Reddit theories about it afterwards, because I've spent many an hour every so often reading up on it. It leaves you with questions, and I will say it's more disturbing on a second watch. I haven't seen it since last year, and it was very enjoyable to watch again, and there were new things I actually picked up on as well, so I would definitely recommend this film.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably one of the more attractive things about a well-made short film, is if you can make it in a way that enhances its rewatchability. Then you're definitely onto a winner, and this is definitely a very rewatchable film. There'll always be something new that you pick up each time you watch it.
I don't really like watching it several times, but I've actually shown it to two other people as well. Yeah. That's how much I've enjoyed it. I've actually sat through it that many times just because I want to see their reaction and their thoughts on it. Because this film, in a way, it leaves you with questions, is what we can say. Definitely, there are questions towards the end of it. Yeah,
100%. So yes, once again, a very strong recommendation. So you can find Beyond the Aquila Rift on Netflix. The trailer for Love, Death and Robots is attached to our written review, and you can find our review, as always, through the link in the episode notes. So those are our two short films and our two reviews. So thank you very much, as always, for joining us and for listening to us ramble on about the movies we like to watch. If you want to catch any of the other films we've reviewed, head over to cameolaunch.com and check out the reviews page for the full list of shorts that we have that we've highlighted. You can also stay in touch via the socials at Cameo Launch on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Let us know what you thought of the reviews we've written, of the films that we've reviewed. What were your thoughts on them? Please do share your thoughts on those. We'd love to hear them. Additionally, if you are a filmmaker yourself and you're looking for a platform that can highlight your work, then you can submit your film to the Cameo Launch Showcase via Film Freeway. So if you head over to filmfreeway.com/Cameo Launch Showcase, then you can go through the T's and C's on that page and hopefully have your film included in our review lineup and also included in future podcasts as well. So once again, thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to bringing you more awesome shorts. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already, and keep your eyes and ears open for more content coming from the Cameo Launch platform. So it is goodbye from the video wizard, Mr. George Moll.
Bye, everyone.
And it's goodbye from me. You all take care, stay safe, and we'll see you next time.